Hi there, moneymakers. I do hope this advert before the podcast finds you well. Look, I just wanted to reach out and connect with all of you, because if you, like me, like gossip, scandal and controversy in the sporting world, can I highly recommend signing up to the Upshot email. It's got some phenomenal stories like Lawrence Diallo spending 10k on hookers, or Gary Neville getting prank called by some kids at Millfield School, or the Michael Owen sexting scandal, which was actually a very interesting read. Why not click the link in our bio or head to the website www.upshot.email. You are very welcome. Love and champagne.
More love, more love, more love, more love. A bloody free. Have I told you I've got a high basic salary? Making money, now that's the key.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 9 of the Rig Biz Podcast. I am joined not only by a wonderful fly half in the semi-professional game, but also a soon-to-be father, Archie
Kirsten. That will be the music that Clapham will play when I actually bring out my soon-to-be son.
Oh, it's a son. You know.
Well, I don't know it's a son, but I'm assuming with my kind of sperm, it will be a son. And we will name him Johnny Jono Abandonon Haskell Curzon.
Johnny Jono Abandonon Haskell Curzon. That's quite a mouthful of a name.
I'm very excited. It's something to look forward to in Q4. Very much looking forward to becoming a father.
So what happens when you have the son? What are you going to do with it? You're going to take it down the Northcote Road? I mean, what's going to happen? How are you going to present it to your minions, your people?
Well, I've heard through various people in the office that having children is an absolute babe magnet. So yeah, I'll be taking him everywhere I go. Obviously not to Inferno's yet, but when he's 18, me and him are going to be the ultimate duo. People keep saying to me, Clody, that it's hard to have a baby.
Well, it is hard.
No, well, you've got to feed it. And you've just got to change it when it has a shit. I mean, it's just like looking after my head of house at boarding school.
Okay. Well, surely you're quite scared, though, by what's to come. Because is it right in saying the listeners want to know that the mother's not going to be a part of his life?
No. I mean, look, it was one hot night of passion.
What happened? Because quite a lot of the listeners won't know.
Yeah. I released a statement on Monday, you know, because I knew the press were going to get hold of it. But look, in January, I banged on about dry Jan. But one Saturday, I was at home completely nude and just caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror, and I just looked in phenomenal shape. I mean, you saw me at that time.
You did look fantastic in general, yeah.
And I just thought, this is too good to not go out and share it with everyone in Infernos. So I had a few vodka lime and soda at home, put on my tight light blue jeans, my white V-neck T-shirt, my necklace just above the T-shirt, which is it's a great look.
That's a great look. Kind of made Chelsea.
No socks, no socks, shoes, and I just headed out into Inferno's by myself. Didn't know what to expect, and just the night took me. It was one of the best nights because I just didn't know what to expect.
And you were by yourself.
It was like getting on a bloody roller coaster, I just didn't want to get off. And people obviously loving my chat, loving my banter. And nearing the end of the night, all of a sudden, reach for the stars.
Great tune.
Yeah. There were a couple of guys that I'd sort of early in the night had some quite good banter with, and they had their tops off. And I sort of walked over there, had like my vodka lime soda in my hand, just dancing away. And just in the corner's eye, this beautiful chica in what was like a camouflage bikini top and camouflage hot pants.
That's brave and generous.
She'd come as G.I. Jane.
Okay.
She was with a load of girls on a hen do, and she had camo paint on, but in a really classy way. And our eyes locked, and I sort of just moved over there. I was doing the sprinkler with my arm, you know, that dance move. And everyone was loving it, and a lot of people were taking photos of me. So she kind of got the sense I was quite a big deal. We didn't talk, Freddie. It was like we'd known each other for years, and our mouths interlocked, and we just gave each other the kiss of life. You know, we were giving each other mouth to mouth, keeping each other alive. It was a really passionate moment. We didn't speak, and we were just feeling each other. Both of us were in phenomenal shape. We could feel that as we clinched. The most incredible thing is, Fred, we didn't say a word to each other. We were just kissing. Even as we walked out the door, and I said to her, do you want to come back to mine? And she just kissed me. She didn't even say anything.
She said, yeah, nodded with a kiss.
Anyway, I took her back to mine. We were just snogging the whole way through the hallway into my sitting room. And we just got on the sofa and started snogging. And I just had enough time to grab the remote and put on Living with the Lions.
Thank God.
And it got pretty hot and sweaty. I don't want to go into detail, but you can imagine what happened.
Yeah.
Look, it started.
Living with the Lions finally worked.
Just as the prank call came on with Simon Zebo, which is a really funny moment. Yeah. It's quite a funny rugby moment when he has to call his coach.
Yeah, that
and
is quite
they're
funny.
All listening. Yeah. And I was hard. I was really hard.
Right, okay.
From her, but also that moment, because there are two really good moments in my life. What started as dry humping turned into humping, Freddie.
Oh, my
God. In that moment, as the coach realizes it's a prank, and he dropped the dice, and everyone's laughing. It was just an eruption of laughter, and I came.
Oh, my God. Very quick, then.
It was just a magical moment, and then all of that stopped. The moment started, I realized what I'd done. I hadn't worn protection.
Oh, no.
And very quickly after that, she spoke.
Oh, dear.
And unfortunately, she was from Middlesbrough.
From Middlesbrough?
In that moment, she told me she had to go back to meet the Hindu in their travelodge.
Oh,
and
God.
She left. We exchanged numbers, and I thought nothing of it. But then a few weeks later, she told me that she was pregnant.
Oh my God. Are you sure it's yours?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's mine. The dates work out. And so, look, it's one of those things where you just have to step up to a plate, you know. And she's gone back to Middlesbrough, but if I'm being serious, no child of mine is going to be living up north. So we signed the contract, and from the moment Jono is born, he will be mine and only mine, and I'll be raising him as my own cub. In Clapham.
I just hope you're up to the challenge.
No, I am. And, you know, one thing I've been looking at is like, what made me who I am today? Yes, I had an incredible relationship with my father and my parents. But what really made me the man I am today is boarding school.
Yeah, of course.
You
know,
I wouldn't be here if I hadn't gone to boarding school.
No.
The connections, the chat.
The vibe, yeah, definitely.
The fun and games.
Yeah, of course.
The beatings.
Yeah.
That all makes you the man you are today.
Definitely.
And that is why my next business venture is to open up the UK's first boarding school for 18-month-year-old babies to 3-year-olds. I'm hoping if you catch those children at early age, we quite possibly could see the first CEO of a FTSE 100 company at age 12. Clodius, that felt really good to get all that kind of stuff about the,
well,
the
it was
kid
a beautiful
up the chest.
Rant, yeah.
And in light of that, I wanted to bring in one of the biggest guests we've had on the podcast.
Fuck
and
off,
something
hey.
That I know the fans are going to absolutely love.
To celebrate? Yeah, okay.
So I rifled through LinkedIn and sent a very long email to Andy Good, who also works in the city. He's a man after my heart. You know, he's played Fly Half, works in the city, and is incredible. On the old Lash Roo, as you know.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
And so he just came back and said, let's do this. And so...
Goody's going on.
Yeah. I've had to have to take time from work to bring him in. I think there's only one thing for it.
What's that?
On-site chat. Goody.
Lads.
Oh, here he is.
Welcome to the chat zone.
Where are you, Goody?
So I'm just in the city, but which you know it is. Arch, I'm surprised you're not next door somewhere.
Yeah, well, I'm working from home. I like to be in my area of Clapham where I'm doing the pod. It just makes me feel a bit more relaxed. Otherwise, when I'm in the city doing a pod, it just makes the chat more businesslike. But I'm more than happy to meet up at the Ned anytime, Goody. Just let me know.
Funny you should say that. I got a meeting there this afternoon. So
what a place. What a place. It's got a swimming pool on the roof. Unbelievable.
Yeah, you're stuck in Clam though. So what are you going to do?
Well, I could shoot in this afternoon if you want, and we could go seal the deal and then go for a swim if you fancy it.
Well, I was going to
say... Speedos only. Budgies.
I was going to say, it's amazing because you both work in the city. You're both, professional rugby players.
Yeah.
You claim
semi-pro,
to be semi-pro. Ex-pro. So you've never done any business together? They're like, you know...
No, it's fascinating. We haven't. And it's such an honour to have Goody on because everyone knows, you know, a long time ago I shot for BT Sport Rugby. And in my change room, I have two photos up in the change room to inspire me before I go for a game. I have a photo of Johnny Wilkinson, you know, as... one of the most iconic fly halves out there. He's done it all.
Yeah.
But lacks a lot of chat. And then I have a photo of Goody right next to him. And that is something I look at and I think, that's the kind of guy I want to be after the game. That's where I'm going to go get it. I'll win the game after. I'll be Johnny on the pitch, Goody afterwards.
Still have the photo of Cipriani and his wife?
I have it, yeah. And by my bedside, I have a photo of Sips and his wife. Yeah. And that's lovely, very, very comforting. Very comforting.
For what reason? For what reason have you got that volume?
Well, I think just sometimes it's just nice to stare at. And if you can't sleep...
The wife or Sips?
But, well, both, really. It's just what I do is I let my mind wander. And you can just imagine what they get up to. Fantastic
couple.
Well,
if you are listening, Victoria Rose, lots of love.
Yeah, lots of love. Yeah, unfortunately, that photo has been put down. For the time being, I've just got photos of Pano around my bedroom. Just, you know, I'm focusing on that. Just want to destroy that chassis.
Mate, I am all over that. I'm watching you training on social media. I'm thinking Pano's going down in within 2 minutes. He's hitting the canvas.
He is under a big mistake. Him, Tins and Haas think he's going to walk all over me. I think he's going to be in for a big, big shock.
Biggest fight Pano has ever had is basically the fight with his dad, whether to get the Bentley out or the Rolls.
Exactly, you know, exactly.
He doesn't know the streets like you, does he?
No, and I said to him, you know, good, I said to him when I saw him, I said, I'm going to get inside him like those little boys did at Eton. He knows what to expect.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is an honour to have the legendary Andy Goode on, a man who's won 5 Prems, 2 European titles and a championship, and still had time to make Dave Ward his bitch.
Who?
Dave Ward. But maybe we'll get into that later. But Goody, let's start off, you know, when you're growing up, born in Cov, unfortunately. But unlike your co-host, Big Jim, you didn't have to go through the state school system. You thankfully went to, you know, 2 lovely public schools, which is where Archie claims he learned his sort of sporting prowess, where he became the man he is today.
Yeah.
Is that where you learned your skills to become, you know, an international rugby player?
Basically, my rugby story started, I think it was my brother's birthday. My mum and dad arranged for him as part of his present to join the local rugby club, which was Barker Butts. And I was the younger brother. And being the younger brother, I went along and watched, and I just decided to try and ruin his birthday by crying on the sideline until the coach came over and let me play. So the coach comes over and says, oh, why is he crying? And mum and dad were like, well, I think he wants to join in, but it's his brother's birthday, so we're not going to let him. So I basically cried a bit more, and the coach was like, well, just let him join in. And then I just dominated from there, basically.
Goody probably doesn't know this, but Goody had a significant influence at my time at school.
What?
Well, because at Cheltenham College, when I was sort of playing rugby, sometimes on the weekend, they allow you to go to the retreat. You know, that's a local pub in Cheltenham.
What place?
And Goody would sometimes be in there from time to time. And again, it was just a coincidence. You know, we bumped into each other and he was the first person to tell me it was okay to smoke a Marlboro Light on a Saturday and drink. He said it won't affect your performance. You're too young. Don't worry about it. So, Goody, thank you so much. That was a real sort of lesson learned in the retreat. And it really, and for at least 5 years, I did realize that smoking is bloody cool, and did help me with the ladies, especially.
Oh, yeah.
Because they would see me on the pitch performing and think, this guy is in phenomenal shape. He's, you know, playing first 15 rugby. And then they see me in a retreat, you know, necking beers, smoking Marlboro Lights. Say, what can this
He's
guy
a rock
not
and roller.
Do?
Yeah. He's a rock and roller.
I used to hold court in the back garden at the retreat. Just next to the toilets. It was a hell of a place. I used to love that.
Yeah.
Oh, the single life, eh?
Yeah.
Good times.
They were good times. They were good times. I would, Goody probably doesn't remember me, but I'd just stand right about a meter away from him and I'd just sort of, I would pretend to be joining in with Goody, and that would actually get me sort of the scraps coming off the side. I'd be in the slips just waiting.
In the slips.
Yeah. I met a lovely 43-year-old woman who had 2 children. And yeah, that was a one hell of a night. Yeah. We had a bit of dry humping, and not nothing too serious, but I definitely learned about the anatomy of a woman when I got with her.
Well, talking about,
do you remember names? Do you remember names?
I think, well, she's in my scrapbook as MILF number 2. MILF number 1 was on a holiday in Cornwall, but that was one of my dad's friends, and that's a story that's not meant to be told.
No. We're talking about sort of applying your trade and, you know, learning from your elders. Goody, when you joined that Leicester team you know, straight out of school. They were incredible. I think it was four back-to-back Prems. They won two Highland Cups. You played a part in all of them. But you're coming into a team for the legends, Martin Johnson and the like. What was it like coming in to those boys, especially this is old school rugby days? You know, what did you have to do with their an initiation? Did it get loose? Just give us a flavour of rugby back in those days.
Day one, I made a massive mistake at Leicester Tigers. I was an 18-year-old kid, and the changes were set back in the day. It was where the church training ground is now, but it was Oakley Wigs. They hadn't built the big training facility they've got there now. But we were changing in basically the local rugby club's changing rooms. And there was a changing room A and B. And I've walked in, on the left is A and on the right is B. And I just thought, right, I'll just go in the A changing room. It doesn't really matter. I didn't know anything. No one warned me. And I've stuck my bag down. And then literally about 10 minutes later, I'm just looking at the floor thinking, what am I doing in here? Where's all the young kids? Where's all the other lads my age? I can't just be straight in with the legends. And Neil Back walks over to me. He's like, Andy, isn't it? I said, yeah. He said, good to meet you. I said, I think you're in the wrong place. I was like, Backy, sorry, mate, what do you mean? He said, well, you sat where Jono puts his fucking bag, so I suggest you pick your bag up and fuck off into changing room B with all the other lads. I remember one day, actually, when I think when Jono started respecting me a little bit, we were training, and I'd thrown a pass out. From 10, Jono was running an angle off me, and I fired it, and I thought it was a pretty good pass, straight in the hands, and he dropped it. And I'm like, oh, shit. So I turned to Jono, I said, Jono, sorry, really bad pass, and he just gave me a filthy look. The monobrow comes out, he stares down at you, frankly smile, and you sat there thinking, I've said sorry, you know, I'm sorry, Jono, and you start panicking. Anyway, he doesn't talk to me for the rest of the session. I'm the fly off trying to call moves. He comes up to me after the session, he's like, Goody, I need to have a word with you. I said, Jono, I said, anything. What do you want me to do? Do you want me to clean your car? Can I clean your boots? Can I wash your socks? Give me your underpants. I'll do anything. I'm sorry, it was a really bad pass. And he looked at me and he said, Goody, if you ever throw a pass like that out again and apologise for it when someone drops it, I'll fucking clip you around the ear. So what do you mean, Jono? He said, there was nothing wrong with the pass. He said, I dropped it. It was my hands. You need to be bollocking me for having shit hands. I'm like, I'm so sorry, Jono. He's like, stop fucking saying sorry to me. I'm like, sorry, John. I mean,
did you not have an infamous scrap with one of the most annoying voices in world rugby, in Austin Healey?
I did. And there's a very different story in his book to the truth.
Go on.
Austin was known as the Leicester Lip, wasn't he? So everyone, you know, he'd give banter. And then eventually a forward would just fucking punch him, right? Because he's too annoying. And that's what happens, right? You push someone over the edge and then eventually they explode. And a few forwards had a ding-dong with him. And I say ding-dong, they just slapped him. He went down and that was the end of it. But one day after training, there was a couple of balls that we had, and I remember Jordan Murphy took one of the balls off. He was like, I'm going to do some skills, and there was only one other ball left, and I was holding it. We finished our back session, and Austin was like, Goody, give us that ball. I said, no, I'm doing some kicking with Tim Stimpson, who is my kicking coach and obviously playing fullback as well and my mentor and all this stuff. Great bloke Tim Stimpson was. And Austin was like, no, give us the fucking ball. I said, Austin, I'm doing kicking with Stimmo, you want a ball, go and get another one. And he said, Goody, I'm a 60-cap international. You're a 20-year-old kid. If I say give me the ball, you're going to give me the ball. I said, Austin, I'm from Coventry. If you want the ball, you come over here and fucking get it, son. So it was a bit of a Mexican standoff. And he eventually walks over. The ball goes on the floor. He's throwing a punch that ducked. And then we've both gone at each other. And it's probably pathetic. Like, thinking back now, it's probably just backs. It's probably Will Smith slaps. That's probably what it was, just that sort of thing. But eventually, the way of Leicester was let them fight and then eventually it gets splits up or someone gets knocked down. Ultimately, Paul Gustard was there, and Paul Gustard will tell you the story as well. He walks over and it was obviously a pathetic handbags moment. And he tries to get in between us, and I've thrown the last punch and it's clipped Austin on the chin. He's gone down. And Guzzi's held me back, and then it's all split up, and all the lads were winding Austin up. Glenn Gelderbloom, who was a centre at the time, it was his very first training session. He came up to me afterwards. He's like, what the fuck have I walked into here? You're all beating each other up. I've just come from South Africa where everyone gets on. Anyway, fast forward, Austin goes inside. He has to go for an X-ray just to check that he's I've not fractured his cheekbone or anything. But in the book that he's written, he's put it the other way around. And he said he decked me and I had to go for an X-ray and I missed 3 weeks of rugby or something like that. So as we know, Austin's a liar and I knocked him out. And that was the end of it.
Goody, have you messaged Austin about this? Because I know a good lawyer. There sounds like it could be a good lawsuit there. Goody, you might be aware, I don't know, I've just obviously recently released that I'm to raise a child on my own in Clapham. And you're a father of twins. Have you got any advice? Because I was sort of saying to Freddie, it doesn't seem that hard. A lot of people say, you know, having kids is quite hard. But I said to Freddie, look, I did my Duke of Edinburgh and I managed to get off Snowden with a compass, a map and a pot noodle. I don't think how hard a child can be.
Well, don't feed it pot noodles to start off with would be the first bit of advice. The number one bit of advice, the best thing I've ever done is get a nanny. Yeah. We call I won't name her, but we call our nanny Mary Poppins. She is unbelievable. The greatest bit of advice, you're a man of the corporate world, a man that works hard in the city.
Yeah.
You need to be at your desk. You need to be at these business lunches, these meetings, these bloody beers after work and all this stuff. Just get a nanny, mate. Easiest thing you can do.
Yeah, Goody, you're right. I'm going to look into a live-in nanny, ideally from Scandinavia. Here, they are exceptional.
Yeah, they're very good.
And I think that will fit well. I mean, also, I'm looking into raising some capital to opening up the first boarding school for 8-month-old babies to 3-year-olds. Because I just think if we can catch them that early, I was saying to Freddie, we could be looking at the first 12-year-old CEO. I mean, with that kind of education put in, and you know, being away from your parents, that always did. I've got a wonderful relationship.
Macy grew up a lot quicker.
Yeah, it does. It really does. Because you get all the crying out.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the beauty. Early, of it,
and the beatings. You know?
Yeah, I don't cry now. I can't remember the last time I cried.
No, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, Giddy.
This all kind of makes me a great rugby player.
Well, yeah. Giddy, let's go
and
back.
And a lover.
Are you a great lover?
Well, I don't look.
It's the first time you've had sex in about 5 years.
No, well, Goody, my technique is, they call me the vibrator. I move quick and sharp and I rattle around.
The old two pump squirt, is it?
Yeah, no, well, it's more a sort of 50 pump squirt, but it moves quickly. It's in the space of 2 seconds, but it's very pleasurable for the females and well known in the Clapham area.
Well, Goody, let's go back to your career because...
Let's get back to this because you are the modern day Piers Morgan, Freddie.
Well, I am. And let's go back to it because you briefly leave Tigers after your success for one weird year at Saracens, and then when you return you're an even better player, even though Saracens may not have gone to plan. But you come back, you're multiple player of the season awards, and you make your debut for England against Italy. So just give us a flavour of your memories of that day and also how you fared in the infamous England initiation.
I've been in the squad a while before I actually got to don the jersey properly on match day, which when I say don the jersey, it never looked good on me, did it? Let's be honest. White shirts, tight white shirts. I played in the wrong era. I should have played in the baggy shirt era. I'd have been a much better player, I reckon. Italy came off the bench, middle of the Six Nations, I think it was. I think the game was unlosable at the time, about 20 to go. And the elation of getting on there, I got the early on first touch, which was fine. The game was won and we scored... I think Matt Dawson scored not long after I came on. So my first real job was to kick the conversion, which wasn't too hard. It was about 10 metres to the right of the posts. Very missable for a guy like myself, but luckily it went straight and true and down the middle. But then, off post-game, you meant to have a drink with everyone. Two things you do. I don't know whether it's still the same now. Two things you do. You meant to go around and have a drink with everyone else in the team. So, at the after-match function, you're pretty inebriated. So I remember some of the guys are trying to stitch me up, Ben Cohen, whatever they give you, they're supposed to have the same in their glass. So he's come over with two tumblers of what looked like JD and Coke, except one of them was basically just straight JD, and one of them was a lot of Coke. And you don't have a choice, you have to crack on with it. Luckily, there's plenty of volume in my body, so it doesn't touch the sides when it goes in and I'm fine. But then the second part of that is you have to sing a song on the bus. So I'd had a few beers, had a drink with a load of the lads in the team after the dinner. And on the way back to the hotel, I'm singing a song on the bus. And it was when Josh Lucy was in the squad, who had a bit of an infatuation with Will Young. And so I sang a Will Young song as my debut song in the words of Josh Lucy. And rumour has it it wasn't just an infatuation, but what goes on behind closed doors.
Goody, I've heard the same rumour. I've heard the same rumour. They were very, very good friends.
Very good. How good?
Just very good friends. Very similar. Good. They had a similar relationship to me and my geography teacher, Mr. Matthews.
Commercial break. you being selfish or me being selfless. Ever which way it makes us both helpless. Got lost in the Clapham North and I fought all the love, but my baby don't wanna talk. Everybody knows everybody's hair grows, but they don't know that it won't grow back if you don't roll back, if you don't hard back. Like the monks in the films, you're a bald old sat like please. You're laughing at me like jeez, so I'm getting down on my knees, praying to the gods to help me please, cause I got no lid, can't you see? But then sons come to the rescue, brand new lid that kinda look like my nephew. And guess what, I got 40% off thanks to Rubis 40 code, that's a lot like So if you guys want to start your lid, go to the link in this box, go to the Sun's website and put in the code RIBWIS40 to get 40% off. You will have a new lid of hair in less than 3 months' time. You're welcome. And then you will not be selfish. And neither will your missus.
I played for England when Johnny was injured, Charlie Hodgson was injured, Toby Flood must have been injured, Ollie Barkley must have... Basically, 10 fly-offs injured, I get picked. Happy days.
I think you put yourself down because you were the reason I dyed my hair blonde and wore gloves when I played rugby. In fact, on my gap year in Canary Wharf, I used to take the tube wearing my rugby gloves. And people used to ask, I said, look, it's the Andy Good effect. Yeah, do you mind?
There you go.
Yeah,
there you go. And the gloves that I wore built me a hell of a house, so that's all I can say.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, honestly, just want to thank you because they really did improve my rugby and they were just a great look. Actually, I sometimes take them on a night out. They are. What has happened to the gloves? I think that should be. We should bring them back. That could be a joint venture.
Well, Goody,
obviously, if I came out of retirement again, I'd still wear them.
Yeah, they really do help.
Well, Goody, obviously, you had an incredible international career. You know, up against all odds, but you got to travel the world and you go play in Argentina a lot. Obviously, a lot of your points were against the Pumas. Of all those sort of traveling trips, who was the worst roommate you ever had, and why?
Probably Steve Thompson when I was playing for Breed. Aesthetically, I used to look at him and then I'd look at myself, and this doesn't happen often. I'd look at him and look at myself and then I'd think, thank God I'm me and not you. Like I felt like a bronzed Adonis stood next to him. And as you know, that's certainly not the case. Now, Tomo was a hanging bit of kit. He took his top off, took his clothes off. I think the Breed boys used to call him Mr. Frosties because his skin was flaky and all this stuff. And it was just... pretty hard to look at him without any clothes on and think, oh, just gives you shivers. But I remember rooming with him and we were over in France. I think we were playing Toulouse away. And he said one day, so, you know, we've gone to bed. He's like, night, Goody, night, mate. We had a meeting at like 8:30 in the morning. He said, look, I'm really, really bad in the mornings. Make sure, you know, you wake me up so I can get to this meeting. I'm like, no worries. So we turn the lights off, say night to each other. And I can hear loads of rustling and like noises going on in the night. And I'm just thinking, oh, I hate to think what's going on in his bed. Anyway, woken up in the morning, eventually I've fallen asleep. He's farting, he's snoring, all sorts. And I've tried to wake him up in the morning. I'm like, Tomo, come on, we've got to go for this meeting at 8:30. So I'm trying to shake him, nothing at all. Tries to chuck a bit of water on him, doesn't really move. And then eventually I tried to peel the sheets back, but the sheets were all stuck to him. Oh. I don't think it was just his psoriasis or his flakes that were coming off. It was more the bodily fluids that he'd extracted in overnight as well. So, yeah, he was a hanging bit of kit. Used to destroy a toilet. But he'd make me feel good about myself in the same sense, because when I saw him getting changed, I thought, as out of shape as I am, I don't look as bad as that. So it was kind of a pick-me-up and a horrific night overnight in a hotel.
Goody, the way you describe him is almost a like-for-like with MILF 2 I met in the retreat, in a way. we should cross notes on that.
Yeah, compare them.
Beautiful lady, wonderful personality, but yeah. Oh.
Well, Goody, talking about Brive, obviously you moved there in 2008. Your first season was incredible. I think you got 264 points or something. You were the second highest point scorer in the league that first year. But just give us a quick flavour on how appalled you were by the differences in professionalism. We've had a lot of people come in here and say how shocked they were when they went to France, how different it was.
I'm not going to lie, I was quite happy with it, to be honest. I'd left Leicester where it was absolutely brutal training, beating each other up, you know, pushing the limits every day. To go to France and pre-season, you start off, do a little bit of running, little bit of weights, loads of skills, and then eventually you get into the season. And at lunchtime, there's bottles of red wine on the table and a barbecue with an old guy cooking steaks. And I'm like, I'm in my element here. I'm drinking red wine at lunchtime and training in the afternoon. So, yeah, it was when I was there, in terms of professionalism, it was at the club level, it was miles behind. But I loved it.
Well, Goody, you obviously went really well, but then in a weird and wonderful turn, like much of your career, you then go and join the Sharks in South Africa, and you have possibly the most memorable, for many reasons, debut of all time. Can you sort of recall to our listeners what went wrong?
Yeah, well, I'll start off with, I was at Breve, and this is French rugby for you, right? So I signed a three-year deal at Breve, and after 18 months, the owner of Breve was a guy called Daniel de Richbourg, who was, at the time when I signed for him, he took me over to the Hotel Creon in Paris, and you know, he was getting ridiculous bottles of red out at the dinner table, and I'm like, where do you want to sign, boss? And then I put it in for the club for 18 months, went pretty well. I then got selected back into the England squad when Jono got the England job. And at the same time that the club and the country and everyone really was going through the financial crisis in 2008, 2009, which Archie must have killed your business off like
no, no, believe. Didn't affect my family at all. We were very, very fortunate. And again, currently now, petrol prices, don't even know what everyone's talking about. I'm very fortunate, Goody. Very, very fortunate.
I filled the range yesterday, 135 quid. So, yeah, didn't touch the side either, but there we go. Yeah, so basically, the financial crash came, and Daniel de Richbourg, who was the owner, his board of directors said to him, you need to sell the club. You need to sell Breve. You're burning 15 million euros a year. He basically handed the club over to a bunch of investors, and they said, look, we can't afford to lose 15 million euros a year. We need to just basically, you know, cut our cloth accordingly and try and balance the books. So, they called us all in for a meeting. I just got back from England training camp. They called us all in for a meeting and said, right, everyone needs to take a 25% pay cut. And all the French boys went, yeah, no problem. And all the English speaking boys went, no, not a chance.
exactly.
So there was a bit of a standoff. And then eventually, you know, you speak to your agent about it. And my agent said, well, do you know what? The Sharks are desperate for a 10 because Juan Hernandez, who was their 10 at the time, Magic Juan, he'd gone back to Argentina over Christmas and had a back operation without telling the Sharks. So he played in the Curry Cup. He'd then gone back to Argentina over Christmas, had his back operation. He was out for 6 months. And then Super Rugby started after that. So they were like, we need a 10. And they've gone from having Magic Juan as their 10 to who's the only available 10 on the market? Andy Goode. I mean, you couldn't get two more opposite players in terms of talent and looks and desire and marketability and all that stuff, but they were fucked effectively, so they had to sign me. I flew over there and I was a bit jet lagged, and we were playing the Crusaders. I'd landed on the Wednesday, we were playing on the Friday night. I'd had one training session with the lads, I had a barbecue the day I landed on the Wednesday night where a few of the boys were having beers and all this stuff, and I tucked into maybe a few too many, sat there with John Schmidt for a few hours and drank solidly with him, and my God, he can put it away as well. And then we got to the game, and I remember walking out the tunnel in the warm-up, and as I'm walking out, Dan Carter is walking back up the tunnel, and I just looked at him, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, and I thought, what a beautiful specimen. You know, how good would it be being Dan Carter? And he looked at me gone, who the fuck's this mascot that the Sharks have brought along? This competition winner who they're allowing onto the field. Anyway, I just didn't like the way he looked at me. I was a bit jet-lagged. I came off the bench. I tried to show him the inside. He stepped me off the scrum. Ruan Pienaar was my scrum half. He was defending on the inside, maybe a little bit slow off the back of the scrum. And so I just thought he can have it with a swinging arm, try and bust his face up a little bit. And I got yellow carded and off I marched.
I remember it very well, watching it live. And there again, I looked at Goody's photo and said, That's what you got to do.
You've
got to be remembered. It's not you're not here for a long time. You're here for a good time. You know. So another good note for the younger listeners listening. If it's not going well, at least leave your mark on the opposition.
Yeah, knock out your opposite number.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, you go for the best player in the world.
Goody, you then come back from South Africa, and within a matter of months, you've gone from being an international superstar playing out in South Africa as well to playing in the championship, essentially, for Worcester. Can you just tell us how unglamorous that year was? I mean, when you get to the championship, that must have been shocking.
I've turned up at Worcester. Mike Ruddock was the coach at the time who signed me. I love Mike Ruddock to bits for offering me that contract. Ridiculous. He got sacked, and they employed a gentleman. I say gentleman, I can't call him that. They employed a guy called Richard Hill, who everyone will know, not the World Cup winning back row Richard Hill, the old Bath scrum half Richard Hill, whose nickname was the Poison Dwarf when he played, and he was a horrific coach. So I'd gone from my last game for the Sharks was against the Bulls in Pretoria, a big derby game in front of 60,000 mad screaming Africans. My first game for Worcester Warriors was Plymouth Albion away.
What a fixture.
Yeah, I mean, what could only be described as a field. What a fall from grace that was. Anyway, we were losing to Plymouth Albion with about 20 to go, and they just bring the postman off the bench and you've got to deliver, haven't you? And that's the way it started. And it was a brutal year. It was an enjoyable year because I got to know, you know, I had some very good mates. I'm still mates with a lot of the guys from Worcester. In terms of socially, when you're winning every week, it threw me back to the Leicester days a little bit. You knew you were going to a game and you knew you'd win it. So you could plan your night out.
Good. It's very much like, you know, where I play with the Clapham Falcons. You know, it's very rare we lose. And, you know, it allows us to plan our lasharoo after every game. Most of the time it is actually just in Clapham and Infernos. But that suits me well because I don't like too much change. But, yeah, I mean, Goody, have you been to Infernos? I'm guessing you have been.
Are you taking the piss?
How many caps have you got there? I've never seen you there, and I go most weekends. I've seen Ollie Barkley in there.
I'm a bit too old for it now, but in my single heyday, I'll say I've got 20 caps in Infernos.
Oh, that is amazing.
It isn't masses, but when you've not lived in Clam, is it called Clapham or Clam? My brother used to live in Clapham.
It really depends where you went to school. Clam or Clapham?
If you're a bit higher end, you call it Clam.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to roll out Infernos and go and stay at his house.
Well then, Goody, you obviously go to Wasps and, you know, they were in a lot of financial woes at that time, and you take him from the dusty old stadium in Wickham to the grand shining lights of the Rico. You keep him up, you get him to European rugby, and then you decide to move on for a big money deal to London Irish. But it seems like you never got out the changing room. What happened?
Effectively, when you say I didn't get out of the changing room, I did. I turned up. I got in and out of the changing room pretty quickly, realising how bad they were. No, I'm joking. I rocked up. Do you know what? I'd had a knee operation and a shoulder operation. I'd left Wasps. And Di Young always said to me, he said, I want you to stay at Wasps as a coach. He said, but if you have the desire to still play, and if you think in your own mind you need to still play, you need to get that out of your system before you go into coaching. So I signed a one-year deal at London Irish. It meant I didn't have to move house and all this stuff. And I obviously travelled to the training ground. And it was when the 2015 World Cup was on. So it was the longest pre-season ever. They delayed the start of the Premiership to October 2015. And we started pre-season in sort of middle to end of June. And I'm looking at it going, it was about 18, 19 weeks. And I hated pre-season when I was 20 years old, let alone 35. And my knee was sore and my shoulder was sore. And the alarm bell started ringing early on. I've looked around the changing room. And you look around the changing room and you think, he's a good player. He's good. You know, he's not bad. He's a young kid with experience. You know, he's a young kid with a lot of talent. I could see none of it. You know, I'm looking around going, yeah, we're going to struggle this year. And that's, you know, with me. And that's saying that about myself as well. I wasn't enjoying it. So I just said, look, I'm going to retire. And I went to speak to them, did it all properly. I said, listen, I'm not enjoying it. I don't think the body can do what you're asking me to do day in, day out at training. So I'm going to pull the pin on my career and you know, we can use some injuries that I had at Wasps as the reasons for retirement. So that's what they did. They put out a statement saying, you know, he picked up injuries at Wasps that haven't healed. So, you know, we wish Andy all the best in retirement. And that was me.
So with all that in mind, how much do they have to pay you at Newcastle to come out of retirement?
Well, story goes. So I ended up going and working over the World Cup, 2015 World Cup in the media. And then I was supposed to start a job in foreign exchange post-World Cup. And I thought, you know what, I'll just push it back to January and I'll enjoy a Christmas for once. So I say for once, I always enjoyed a Christmas, but it would be my first year of not being a professional rugby player where you can actually have a proper crack on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Boxing Day, where there's always a game that lies in and around that, those 3 days. So you can have a go one day, but you can't do a proper Christmas like all your mates can, the City Boys that we can do now. Hey, Archie.
Yeah, silly season, Goody. It's called silly season.
Exactly.
It's out every night. Client entertainment. I mean, you've gone from a profession where you have to perform on just a Saturday, and now you're in the city, big boy. You've got to perform Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Not Friday. That's the day you have off where you chill out.
Yeah, exactly. So I remember I'd watched Saracens play Newcastle, up at Newcastle on the Sunday, and Charlie Hodgson, who I think is a year younger than me, he played 10 for the Saracens, got man of the match, absolutely dominated. Newcastle got spanked by 30, 40 points. And I'm like, geez, you know, fair play to Charlie, still going. Obviously, he was a number two to Owen Farrell at the time, but he got man of the match play really well. And then I'm walking the dog, Monday morning, I'm walking the dog about 10 o'clock in the morning, and my phone goes and it says Dean Richards. Now, Dean Richards gave me my very first contract at Leicester, and we got on really well. He signed me back to go to Leicester after I left Saracens. And we stayed in touch over our career, over my career. Yeah, every now and again, we'd have a phone call, bit of a chat, whatever. So he's phoned me up on the Monday morning. I'm walking the dog. I said, Dino, how are you doing? He's like, yeah, Goody, yeah, not great after the game yesterday. I said, yeah, I did watch it. I said it was, you know, men against boys, a bit of a masterclass from Charlie Hodgson, all this stuff. And they had a load of injuries at the time, Newcastle. They were bottom of the league and really struggling. And Dino says, look, I'm going to cut to the chase. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm walking the dog, Dino. What are you doing? He said, well, I'm about to ask you a very serious question. I said, go on, then. He said, you fancy coming out of retirement? And I laughed. He said, what are you laughing at? I said, Dino, I retired in July. I said, the most physical exercise I've done since July is play golf, walk the dog, a little bit five-a-side football with my mates on a Monday night. He's like, right. I said, and there is you asking me if I want to come out of retirement. He said, yeah. So what's the answer? I said, Dino, you must be fucked if you're phoning me and I'm your best option. He said, Judy, he said, I know your history. I know you can run a game. You know, you can kick goals. We just need an old head. Basically, he saw what Charlie Hodgson did and thought, I'll get a bigger, fatter version of that with a bit more hair. And hopefully that will help us stay up. So he said, look, Dean, if you're serious, you're going to have to phone my agent, Duncan Sandlin. I said, I'll be honest, I've got no desire to come out of retirement. I said, but have a phone call with my agent and see where it goes. And he's like, okay, well, tell Duncan I'm going to give him a call in about 20 minutes. So I put the phone down, phoned my agent, Duncan Sandlin, up straight away. I said, Dunk, you're going to have a phone call from Dean. He wants me to come out of retirement. Just ask him for a silly amount of money. So he says no, and then we don't have to do it. He's like, right, no problem. So off I go, keep walking the dog. Half an hour later, my phone goes, it's my agent, it's Duncan Sandlin. He's like, Goody, how are you? I said, yeah, I'm good. So what are you doing? I said, you know, I've just got home, about to make myself a egg and bacon sandwich. Just chat, fucking love it kind of thing. He said, you might want to sit down. I said, why? He said, well, that silly amount of money we asked for. Dino just said, yes. I was like, fucking hell, why don't you ask for a bit more? So I then thought, shit, I've now got a decision to make. The missus gets home that evening and I said, look, Newcastle want me to come out of retirement. And she said, right. I said, what do you reckon? She's like, well, there's fucking no chance. You can't even run. I said, well, I couldn't run for most of my career, but I still got paid to do it. And she said, genuinely, do you think you can do it? I said, well, not really. She said, well, how much is it? And I told her, and she said, you will be doing that. You will be playing for rugby again next week. I rocked up at Newcastle. And I said to Dino, I said, look, I can't move up there. You know, I live down in Buckinghamshire. And he's like, no problem, Judy. He said, I've seen there's a flight every morning from Heathrow up to Newcastle at 7:30. He said, you can get that flight every day. He said, we'll put a car on to pick you up from home, take you to the airport, we'll book you the flight. He said, and then there's two flights home every afternoon from Newcastle. There's a 2:30 flight or a 4:30 flight. He said, if you want to do your weights here at the clubs, we'll do our rugby sessions in the morning and then you can do your weights and fitness in the afternoon. You can either do that here and then get the 4:30 flight home, or you can get the 2:30 flight home and do it when you get home. Do the weights and fitness when you get home. I said, Dino, I'll take the 2:30 flight home every day. And you have my word that I'll be trying my best to do those weights and fitness when I get home. Anyway, he looked after me really well. Newcastle stayed up, and I got voted as Player of the Year on a nominees panel. I didn't win it, but I think I played 8 games and got nominated for Players Player of the Year.
So let's start off with your old captain from Leicester, Martin Johnson.
No chat, really, guy.
Joe Launchbury?
No chat.
Toby Flood?
Absolutely no chat.
Harry Ellis?
Chat.
Steve Thompson?
No chat.
Paul Sackey?
Chat.
Steve Borthwick?
No chat.
Lewis Moody?
Chat.
Johnny Wilkinson?
No chat, but what a player.
And to finish off, Mr. Briefcase, Elliot Daly.
Chat. Elliot's a great bloke. Puts a smile on my face every time I see him.
Goody, thank you so much, mate.
Mate, Goody, you've been absolutely incredible, mate. Thank you so, so much. It.
No problems, boys. Drinks in the net, eh?
Yes, definitely. Very soon.
Anytime, boys.
Oh, what Christ a boy. I got to say, he is chat.
Entertainment.
He is one big ball of chat.
He's a big ball of chat. Yeah.
What a man. That was bloody interesting.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to put your money where your mouth is as we listen to Archie Curtis' tips of the week before taking him on Unsettle It. Download the app now.
So Archie, now it's time for your favourite section. Is it your favourite section? Isn't it your favourite section? I don't know. One week it is. What is it? It's not question time yet. It's Settle It.
Yeah. And you completely caught me off by surprise.
I know.
It's really exciting when you do stuff like that. Can you write that down as well?
Yeah, what?
Can
just, you just write more surprises?
Just surprise me a bit more because it keeps me on my toes.
Okay, I'll do that immediately.
I've always really wanted someone to give me a surprise birthday. And I always text like all my WhatsApp groups saying it's my birthday this weekend if you want to surprise me.
Like a winky face, yeah.
Yeah. I love a surprise. Actually, that'd be quite good fun if you wanted to organize like a surprise birthday.
We're talking about surprises. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You're meant to be doing a surprise business deal at the Tottenham Stadium for the Saracens game.
Yeah.
Did you go there?
Couldn't make it. Couldn't make it. Well, obviously with the news, me, followed, I took it upon myself to have a baby shower. Where I just went out and drank heavily.
Oh, by yourself?
Yeah, by myself. Well, it was meant to be a few mates, but they never turned up. And to be honest, lucky they didn't turn up because about 1 p.m., I was completely off my rocker. Put it this way, started at 11 and was at home by 2:30.
Oh, my God.
And then
God.
Woke up the next day. And the nice thing was, I got about... I think 16 hours sleep. So I didn't feel bad the next day.
Jesus.
So that is actually why, in a way, the younger listeners, you just go hard and fast.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you don't get a hangover. I actually felt...
You're in bed by mid-afternoon.
I felt better than I did the day before. Really.
And How does that work out?
I don't know. 16 hours sleep, showed you.
Well, also...
Pretty much drank a bottle of tequila and two Guinnesses. Wow. And yeah, completely
So you're taking
out.
The news well as a father. Well, let's look at the fixtures this week. And to kick us off... On April Fool's Day, Friday the 1st of April.
Friday rugby?
Yeah.
Oh my days.
Friday evening.
I love, again, I've been surprised.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it. What's happening on Friday? Where
Sale
are we going?
Sale are fighting against
Manchester.
The
Won't
Saris.
Make Won't make that. Wait, it's too far from London.
Okay. Wait, it's coming on TV though.
Oh, God, brilliant. On what channel?
BT, I think.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, I'll be watching that Friday. And if you want to come around, come watch it.
I'll let you know. But what do you think is going to happen in the Sale game versus Saris?
That's a tricky game.
It is.
My head says Saracens, but my heart says Sale. Just because more Sale players follow me on Instagram. But I can't see anything but a Saracens win.
And then we go to Sandy Park. And the Exeter, well, they used to be the Chiefs. They still are called the Chiefs. They've just changed their logo slightly. Exeter Chiefs come up against Bath.
Oh, what a clash.
Yeah, juicy West Country
Mate,
clash.
This is actually my bet of the week.
What? Okay.
Yeah.
Are you
so
going
I'm giving Bath 5-1 to
five
beat
to
Exeter.
One.
Yeah.
What, with Nathan Hughes and all that lot?
Jesus Christ, that's been generous. That's the way I see it. I think Exeter are going to be wounded from their loss against Leicester. But you know, look, I really want Bath to do it because of my very good friend JJ, Jonathan Joseph.
Yeah,
and also his brother, JJ's brother, plays for Bath.
And your son's gonna be called JJ.
Yeah. There'll be three JJs and like that's quite amazing.
That's a lot of JJs.
That's such a nice thing to think about. I might even think about making JJ JJ's godfather.
Well, he doesn't know you then, really, does he?
No, we've had drinks.
Okay.
We've had drinks.
Well, so your bet of the week...
Him or Dave Atwood, I don't know. I probably Dave, but I
But
mean,
someone in the West Country, and your bet of the week is in this West Country clash, Bath to beat Exeter 5-1.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if you guys want those odds, all you have to do is download Settle It and take Archie on Ridiculous 5-1 there. Anyway, and then we go to King's Home Park for Gloucester against the Mighty Wasps.
Oh, what time is that on?
That is on at 3 o'clock on Saturday.
Oh, at the same time as Exeter.
I think on the Prem
Who
website.
Who is doing this?
I know.
How can I watch all the games?
Prem websites.
Oh,
and
can
the
you watch them all?
Yeah.
That is what I'm going to be doing. That'll be great fun.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
I wonder if I can make up a drinking game or something like that. Where I drink every time there's a try scored.
Well, you'd be naked because there are five 3 o'clock games.
That's actually, I mean, if I wasn't playing rugby on Saturday, that's what I'd be doing.
Okay. Well, who do you think is going to win the Gloucester-Wasps game?
I'm going to go for Gloucester for this one. just because they're in a rich vein of form. And I went to school in Cheltenham, which is quite near Gloucester.
Okay, well, then we go down to Northampton Saints, to Franklin Gardens. I know you've got a lot of friends there who would come up against the Bears.
You've also
got
friends there. The Bears.
Yeah, the Brizzo Bears. Unlucky to lose last week against Saris. Who's going to win this one?
Wow. Again, you don't want to face a wounded bear, if you know what I mean, because they are aggressive. Mm-hmm. And trust me, Dave Atwood is going to be pissed off that he lost at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So I'm actually going to say Bristol Bears by 10.
And then Worcester Warriors at Six Ways come up against Newcastle Falcons.
Quite possibly the most irrelevant
game worst fixture of the year. Worst fixture of the year.
Do not think a soul will be watching that apart from the people watching it live.
Yeah.
Couldn't really care anything, but I'm going to say it's going to be a draw.
It's going to be a draw.
Yeah, it's going to be a 15-all draw.
And then to finish off the weekend in style, we have the London Derby. Ooh. The Irish versus the Quins.
Can't bloody wait for that, Clady. But, I mean, the fact is, Quins are just going to hop, skip, and a jump to that stadium, and they will travel well to that. And I think they will pump London Irish by 20 points.
So if you guys want to get this incredible offer of Bath to win at 5-1, just download the Settler app, and you can challenge Archie and your friends on there. Bon chance. So, Archie, one more week to go. You're a wiser man. You're a heavier man. You've got, you know, all these burdens on your shoulders now.
I feel exhausted, but it's been emotional.
It's been wonderful.
You know what this podcast reminds me of?
What?
It's when Philip Schofield came out as a homosexual.
Very serious, yeah.
And this is what this pod feels like. Yeah. It feels like I've come out to a lot of people.
You've come out to the thousands.
Yeah, but I'm obviously, I'm not gay.
I'm just becoming
a father.
Yeah, of course.
But they're both really big things.
They're wonderful and big things, yeah. But also another big wonderful thing, which we haven't even had time to mention, because of the child, because of the interviews, because of all the entertainment. You got boxing in 3 weeks.
Yes.
You got the biggest boxing match of your life in three weeks.
Yeah, yeah. You think that, you know, you think just having a child isn't enough. And now I've got to go in a ring and sort out Pano.
Yeah.
So I can't wait. I mean, all the tables now are completely sold
out.
Which is incredible. And the money that we're raising on that night is going to the Brain Tumor Charity and the Restart Rugby, two incredible charities.
All money going to the charities.
Who need the money,
that's what I'm saying.
There are after-dinner tickets now, and they are going quickly. I think we've got about 50 tickets left.
50 tickets, and that gets you the whole boxing experience.
Just to give you some idea, we have got Haas coming, we've got Tins coming, we've got Genji coming, we've got Burnsy coming, we've got Jay Dernbach coming.
Yeah.
We've got Adam Smith and Johnny Nelson commentating on the boxing.
I mean,
it's going to be an unbelievably...
I can't believe those guys are in. That's
good
amazing.
Night. We've got Simon Thomas doing
the comparing.
Darren Goff's coming. I mean, honestly, there are so many characters.
Heard Stokes and Bawley maybe come. We don't know yet.
Yeah, so many characters that have come from the podcast are going to be there. And, mate, I can't wait. I am looking forward to getting in there and doing the business. You've been watching me spar
this week. Mate, you're looking good.
And, yeah.
Better than last week when you...
I am going to knock Pano out. And trust me, it's not getting filmed. So if you want to see it, you better buy a ticket.
Well, guys, all you got to do is click on the link in the bio and you can buy tickets directly. Make sure you get hold of those now. Until then, Archie, I think I should leave the floor to you as a newfound father to just give a couple of your new parting wisdom words to the masses.
Well, interestingly, just before the Saracens game, I left Mario Toji a voice note, as you know I do to various rugby players, well-known rugby players. And I think this is very appropriate for, you know, me being a father. But I said...
The swallow sometimes flies, but also sometimes needs to land on a branch and pause and reflect before becoming a swallow again.
Archie Curzon, I'll see you next week.
Don't know what that means, but if you really think about it, it's pretty deep.
Old man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you were. Old man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you.